Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to Colin's Last Stand Side Quest right here on YouTube. My name is Colin Moriarty. As always, I hope today's video finds you and yours very well. Today's episode is all about Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I know a lot of you are very excited about this collection of games that's going to be coming out sometime in the next 100 years. But I think if you have expectations that this is going to be this grand kind of saga, I think you should temper those expectations, because if you take all of the news that's been trickling out about this game over the last couple of years, you have no reason to be optimistic whatsoever. I do want to say at the top, though, before I even get into the video itself, that I hope I'm wrong. I hope this video is totally wrong in the end, but I don't think it's going to be. Let's go. Final Fantasy VII, released in 1997, is one of a handful of games that exudes an almost mystical quality. There are a ton of reasons for that, among them that Final Fantasy VII was the first must-have PlayStation game that truly put the brand on the map, that it popularized the once-niche JRPG genre when gamers were swimming in oceans full of side-scrollers and 3D mascot adventures, and that it's actually pretty damn good. I wavered for a while on the latter. I hadn't played it all the way through since high school, but I platinumed it this past summer on PlayStation 4, and I loved it. While I don't think it's anywhere close to being the best Final Fantasy game, we all know which ones are undeniably better, and while I could easily rattle off a dozen JRPGs I personally like more from outside of the franchise, it's a game that has earned its plaudits. Which is why I'm so confused why Square Enix seems to be handling its name, its legacy, and what it means to players around the world so loosely, and even flippantly. It should come as no surprise that it all kinda sorta seems to be blowing up in their faces. Final Fantasy VII Remake, or whatever it's going to end up being called if and when it actually comes out, was first revealed to the world way back in 2015, and you have to remember the climate of when it was announced in order to fully grasp the gravity of what's happened since. Rewind 6 months from Remake's E3 reveal, and you'll find yourself in December of 2014, at the very first PlayStation experience. It was there that Square Enix had a big announcement for Final Fantasy VII, that it was coming to PlayStation 4, as is. I was in the room during the announcement, and the crescendo of excitement when the logo flashed on the screen was palpable, as was the immediate nosedive when it became clear that Shinji Hashimoto, longtime producer of the series, was merely referring to a port. I felt bad for Mr. Hashimoto, whose onstage laughter was made into a meme that summed up everything about Square Enix in recent years, but I didn't feel bad for Square Enix itself, an entity that didn't seem to grasp just what this game means to people, and that there was a craving for something, well, better. Interestingly, Square Enix has been fumbling around with the idea of re-releasing Final Fantasy VII in some sort of updated, rearranged format since only a few years after it initially launched on PS1. In an interview from 17 years ago given with RPG Gamer, Final Fantasy creator and longtime producer Hironobu Sakaguchi, just a few years before he bailed out of Square Enix completely, noted that there was a plan to remake, his word, not mine, Final Fantasy VII, along with its PS1 cousins 8 and 9, on PlayStation 2. If you didn't know that, that makes sense. These projects were never spoken about again. You'll also remember that Final Fantasy VII was shown off in technical demo format on PlayStation 3 well over a decade ago, setting obvious seeds with fans that clearly never sprouted. While naturally overshadowed by the never-ending development cycle of what would become Final Fantasy XV, Final Fantasy VII was still on lots of gamers' minds, and not because the players put it there themselves. And for what reason exactly? To what end? To remind players that they can't have what they want? That they can get three Final Fantasy XIII games that they never asked for instead? Through these various lenses, it becomes clear why Final Fantasy fans and those who were desperate to revisit Final Fantasy VII outside of the likes of Dirge of Cerberus on PS2, Crisis Core on PSP, and some animated content felt like they were being toyed with, and why frustration started to boil anew with the PS4 port. Obviously, Square Enix doesn't owe fans anything, it doesn't owe any of us anything. But if it wants to maintain a viable tether to its loyal player base, some of us have been playing its games dating back 15 plus years before the merger between Squaresoft and Enix, it needs to understand what it has with Final Fantasy VII. And what it has is a cultural touchstone for millions, a Final Fantasy that has easily outsold every other core entry. It needs to be treated with care. And even with a remake announced and apparently now coming, and with the immediate feelings of excitement that evoked erasing all of the negativity for a short while, it still doesn't seem that the monolithic Japanese publisher has learned any lessons at all. Not only from Final Fantasy VII's history, but from the epic Final Fantasy XV debacle, not to mention the ever-growing Kingdom Hearts 3 wait fest. Can you blame fans for being exhausted and agitated as we approach the third anniversary of this announcement? The reason we're even talking about Final Fantasy VII Remake at all right now is because news was reported just days ago that Square Enix is still hiring for the game. Now, this isn't in and of itself a cause for concern. Studios and publishers working on in-progress games, and even games that are nearing completion, regularly hire during the dev cycle to flesh out ever-changing needs. This job listing, though, was curious to me because of what was being said. Silicon Era translated the job listing from its native Japanese, a listing which states that, quote, in order to meet fan expectations, we must increase the game's quality another step higher. Therefore, in addition to the current members of the Final Fantasy VII Remake development, we must establish a core group that includes level planners, battle planners, designers, engineers, and various types of jobs to tackle on the production of the big title, end quote. Now, this news needs context, and the context makes the story even worse than it already sounds. You might remember that Final Fantasy VII Remake was originally being developed by a studio outside of the Square Enix family. The studio in question is CyberConnect 2, a mid-tier Japanese developer best known for their .hack series and a ton of Naruto games spanning back 15 years. Their inclusion was immediately met with skepticism. CyberConnect 2 had never ever even remotely created a game on the level of top-tier Square Enix fare. But now you should be even more skeptical, because in May of 2017, Square Enix announced that it was stripping the game from CyberConnect 2 and bringing it in-house. Probably a wise decision, but a decision necessitated by some borderline incoherent vision and planning to begin with. Making matters even worse is that, at the time it was revealed that Square Enix itself would take over, Naoki Hamaguchi, a member of the Final Fantasy team since 12, noted that the takeover was quote-unquote a sensitive subject, and that the decision was made because of concerns over quality and timeliness. So, Square Enix announces a game in mid-2015, takes the lead studio off of it 2 years later, and then a year after that begins hiring to flesh out the team that is taking over from there. That's where we are now. And in an interview with Tetsuya Nomura, Kingdom Hearts 3's director who is also somehow directing Final Fantasy VII Remake, he mentioned that this project was in production before Final Fantasy VII's PS4 port was revealed at PSX in 2014. In other words, once we reach PSX 2018, Final Fantasy VII Remake, according to its own director, will be entering at least its fifth year of production. Meanwhile, they're hiring for every conceivable position a year after removing the original studio that had been working on the game for some 3 years. Oh, and speaking of Mr. Nomura, don't forget that he didn't even know he was directing Final Fantasy VII Remake until he saw his name in an internal company presentation listed as the game's director. That's a completely true story, by the way. The man directing Kingdom Hearts 3, which also seems like it's never going to come out, is also directing Final Fantasy VII Remake, and he was totally unaware he was its director. No one asked him or ran it by him, just more awesome planning on the part of Square Enix. The original Final Fantasy VII was made for $45 million, an astronomical sum to create a video game in the mid-90s. Can you imagine how much its remake is going to cost at this rate? I mean, the game's producer, Yoshinori Kitase, noted at the very end of 2015 that production was quote-unquote finally getting started. And that was 18 months before CyberConnect 2 was removed, and nearly 2.5 years before this hiring spree. Uh-oh. There's plenty to take umbrage with when it comes to Final Fantasy VII apart from all of this, a lot of it sprouting from Square Enix's insistence that it reinvent what doesn't need reinventing. For starters, Final Fantasy VII Remake is shaping up to be an action RPG, an odd decision from my perspective, especially because the original's active time battle system still works just fine today, and the original system would be easier to execute on and truer to the core game. The team is also gearing up to make tweaks and changes to the story and presentation, which is at the very heart of what makes Final Fantasy VII work to begin with. And most confoundingly, Square Enix is releasing the remake episodically, a totally bizarre move that shows it not only doesn't believe it can deliver the entire game in a timely fashion, or at all, but that it internally feels it's biting off more than it can chew. The justification for this is even crazier, that Final Fantasy VII is too big, too broad, and too extensive to make again. This was all being said, mind you, as Final Fantasy XV was reaching the end of its development cycle, insinuating that somehow, Final Fantasy VII was more ambitious and more grand than the newest game. Then, when asked if each episode would be a full-length game in sync with the likes of Final Fantasy XIII's trilogy, Mr. Kitase told Game Informer that each episode, quote, will essentially be a full-scale game for each part of the multi-part series, end quote. The game is too big to reapproach with current production standards, so you're going to make at least 3 full-length games to make up for it. Okie dokie, then. I hope I'm wrong, but I think Square Enix has unintentionally set up Final Fantasy VII fans, so long toyed with and left on edge, for the biggest disappointment yet. Something that doesn't remotely meet expectations, and something, frankly, that may never see the light of day at all. All signs point to this being a disaster in its current state, and with Final Fantasy XV's absurd dev cycle barely in the rearview mirror, and with Kingdom Hearts 3's cycle entering its own insane territory, there's every reason to believe that we're not going to see this game for a very long time, and if and when we do, we'd be wise to temper our expectations. Alright, that's it for this episode of Colin's Last Stand SideQuest. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, leave your comments below. I'll be reading them. Thumb up the video if you liked it. Thumb it down if you don't. And share Colin's Last Stand SideQuest, Fireside Chats, Knockback, all of it. With friends, family, enemies, co-workers, your priest, etc. Let them know about the might, the majesty, and the wonder of Colin's Last Stand. I will waste no more of your time today, but I do appreciate the time you did give me. I will see you next time for more SideQuest. Until then, keep on gaming.